Okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today for another episode of the podcast that makes you feel better. The weather's been pretty grim in this country, north and south. We're actually in the south, but north and south has been very grim. But the sun always shines, Leslie Ann, when you're on Planet Porky. The lambs are gambolling through the fields. The daffodils are sprouting up from the soil. And I have to say, to see the sunshine in your face here today in the studio adds to that spring-like atmosphere. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, I swam here, but I got here.
Yeah, of course you got it, yeah, because when you get to Planet Porky, it's a journey worth making. Now, over the last few podcasts, of course, we've been following the adventures of our Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, or Al, as his sister Rachel calls him. And
you can call me Al.
You can call me Al,
do you remember that song? Good song, that.
Yeah, of course I do. Yeah, that was Paul Simon, wasn't it? Yeah, terrific. So what I was going to say is that do you really believe that it was just a distraction for him to suddenly announce that he's getting married and he's having a child, just as the pretty, what's her name? The Home Secretary bully.
Priti Patel.
Priti Patel, thank you very much indeed. Just as the allegations against her being a bully suddenly cropped up, it seemed to coincide. And also, of course, we're now right in the midst of the coronavirus crisis. I think it's fair to say it's a crisis now. He seems to have got a grip of that, but I mean, the man's private life and social life is extraordinary, is it not?
Well, it is, and I'm pretty sure, you know, because they have teams, don't they? Mm-hmm. Teams of PRs and advisors on damage limitation and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's all about timing. We do know that these announcements are never accidental and that they are made for optimum exposure and to deflect other matters in the news, that kind of thing.
Yes.
So I'm not at all surprised that they announced both the baby and the engagement when they did.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit rich to be pouring all this other nonsense on them in terms of, well, how dare he, because he doesn't even have his degree absolute yet.
Yes.
Hang on a minute. He did this very same thing with Marina Wheeler.
Right.
When he was getting divorced from Allegra.
Yeah. From Oxford University, didn't he?
Yeah, Allegra Mostyn Burns.
Right,
And their divorce was not absolute.
Right.
Before he'd gone off with Marina.
Yes.
And she had their first baby only 5 months later. And so history is repeating itself.
And they had four there. There's a 20-year age gap between him and Carrie. Baby's going to be born into Downing Street. I mean,
my one quibble, though, with him. My one quibble, lots of quibbles, but this main quibble today.
Yes.
How can you not know whether you have five or six children?
Well, I just don't think he's prepared to tell anybody. I mean, we all know from the row in the flat with Carrie, which everybody suspects was something to do with him having another association with another female, maybe, you know.
Well, he can't keep it in, can he?
Well, he is a serial shagger.
Gotta let it out.
He is. Yeah. In our business, we would call him an absolutely serial shagger.
And
he
had a black eye recently. And that was, we talked about this.
Yes.
We revealed this exclusively on Planet Porky that they'd had a Barney because he'd been caught out seeing somebody else.
Yeah.
And of course, she would have been pregnant by this time.
That's right. She's been pregnant 5 months now, is it?
Well, she's due in June, they're telling us. So it's,
that's about 5 months, So there you go. In fact, you were the first to hint to me that she probably was carrying a baby. You'd read something about her not taking drink over Christmas.
Yeah, world exclusive.
Yeah, world exclusive, that's right, But years ago, you know, when Boris was sort of... You see, he's never taken a job seriously until he became Prime Minister. Every other job he's had in the past has just really been something to keep him occupied. You can't imagine him as a responsible journalist, can you? Covering, you know, Europe for the... Was it the FT or the Telegraph or one of them?
He kind of got sacked from everywhere, didn't he?
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
For lying in his columns. I mean, how dare a journalist do such a thing?
Yeah, he did get sacked for that, you're right. And he also got sacked for lying to Michael Howard about his relationship with Petronella Wyatt, didn't he?
Yeah, who had two abortions by him.
Wow.
And she's been very open about
that. Golly. I mean,
and then there was a miscarriage somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then he's got a 10-year-old daughter, hasn't he,
by
Helen, somebody.
By Helen, who, and by some amazing coincidence, is she now, or she was, the the wife of a friend or some PR guy or something like that. I
mean, Helen McIntyre.
Yeah, that's right.
I think the child is called Stephanie, but then there is another baby somewhere else.
Yeah.
That he won't say anything about.
But that's rumour, isn't it? That's just rumour.
Yeah, well...
So that's why the people say, I don't know if he's got five children or six children or whatever.
Even on his Wikipedia page, mind you, under personal life, where it says children, five or six, it actually states that.
Really?
Online,
but you don't write your own Wikipedia. People write Wikipedia and people put bits in it. Have you ever looked at your Wikipedia?
I have looked at it.
Yeah.
And my dad's, this was an interesting one because it was about somebody else entirely.
Yes.
It was nothing to do with him.
Yes.
And I do wonder to myself sometimes who actually writes this stuff.
Anybody can put anything in. I was told.
They do.
I looked at mine once years ago and I decided.
Have you got one?
Yeah, there's a Wikipedia profile of me, but I never look at it because I looked at it once years ago when I was on the Express, you know, to Paris. What's it called? The train. Yeah, train. Yeah,
Eurostar.
When I was on the Eurostar to Paris, And it had all sorts of rubbish in it about things I did. It said I'd been a great basketball player, taking the mickey out of my height and all this kind of stuff, you know. And it was so ridiculous, I thought, well, why would you bother even looking at it? But anyway, so what I'm saying
is... it's not a great research resource, is it?
Anything can appear in Wikipedia. But what I was going to say is that I was told years ago, when he was still sort of in the newspaper world, women wouldn't get into the back of a taxi with Boris Johnson. Because he was, you know, a serial shagger of great renown.
Oh, sure,
And
he
great
kissed
success.
Me once at the Mail on Sunday Christmas party.
Oh, really?
I cornered him. He was just leaving this party.
Yes.
With his sister, actually.
Oh.
Who was working for the paper at the time.
Yeah.
And I said, oi, Boris, have some sport here, you know. What have you done with our double-decker buses?
Yeah.
So he said, I don't like these bendy buses. He said, oh, well, you'll be getting some nice, shiny new ones next week.
Oh, was he the mayor then?
Yeah, he was the mayor. And then he said, give us a kiss, it's Christmas. And sort of plonked this very slobbery kind of number on my cheek and I had to kind of go and wash my face.
Oh dear, that's
it was
not
a bit
nice,
gross.
Is it?
No. I did think at
never
the time,
to kiss
if, he,
me.
No, if he were the last man on earth, I probably wouldn't touch him with yours.
Oh dear, that's it's not very really nice, is it?
So what does she see in him?
Well,
is this power? Is this another power-hungry woman?
Well, he's a very charismatic guy.
Do you reckon?
Oh yeah, incredibly charismatic.
To men, maybe. I don't find him sexy.
Well, I think he's a charismatic politician. Every time he opens his mouth, and he's got the fantastic resonant Eton voice, hasn't he?
Well, he sounds like he's talking through phlegm most of the time.
Well, he sounds to me like he's talking right from the back of his throat, you know, with great authority, in my view, almost Churchillian, who's his hero. But I'm sure I've bored you with this before. I've certainly bored the listeners. I did a campaign trail with Clinton in America, right? I got the old Evo from the Express, and so on my gardening year, before I went off and did something else, I took the money and then went and lived in America and followed Clinton around for a year, which is fascinating. But
you should have written a book about that.
Well, there have been so many books written about it. But Clinton is exactly the same, incredibly charismatic, but simply cannot, you know, keep his attention off women. I mean, some of the stories that you picked up on Clinton, you just couldn't publish. You know, allegations of his behaviour towards women, which have since emerged, but you couldn't tell them at the time because nobody knew. But for instance, Little Rock is the capital of Arkansas, which is Clinton's state.
Sure.
He was first Attorney General there, and then, of course, he was governor for two terms, with Hillary having a great job as a partner in the Rose Law Firm in Little Rock, a senior partner. So, I mean, talk about being established members of the community, you know, the governor and Hillary. But I stayed at the hotel, the main old-style hotel in Arkansas, which is deep south and one of the poorest states. And I think it was called the Midland or something like that. I can't quite remember, or the Metropolitan or something like that. But I was in there, and I was in the dining room, you know, one morning. And I was talking to one of the girls, you know, one of the waitresses and all that. She said, you know, how's it going, all that? And I said, yeah, you know, following Clinton around, all that. He'll be here tomorrow, won't he? She said, oh, yeah, we all dread that. And I said, why do you dread that then? She said, well, he comes with all his boys. And all his boys are a collection of about 20 or 30 other blokes. Some of them are the National Guard, which he sort of, you know, sort of put together as his own.
Oh, bum-pinching.
Defense.
This is where this is going, isn't it?
Oh, it's going worse than that. And I said, oh, and so what happens? Oh, she said, on the days that we know that the governor's coming in with all his boys, we all wear trousers because hands slide up the inside of ladies' legs under their skirts on a regular basis. And yeah, and there's no point in complaining about it because nobody does anything about it.
Well, that's abuse. And they wouldn't get away with it now.
It's terrible abuse.
And it's awful to think what we all had to go through as young women.
Yeah.
I couldn't walk across a newsroom without somebody pinched my bum or twanged a bra strap or made a comment, the comments, which would be vile.
Yes, no,
women should not have to go through this.
No, I totally agree with you. And the other thing about him was he would then, at every hotel on, you know, we did all sorts of places in the South, you know, we went to, Phoenix, Arizona and all sorts of places like that. But he would always commandeer a suite of rooms and they would have a reception downstairs and then the boys would go around this reception, the 400 or 500 supporters, pick out the best-looking women and invite them to a personal audience with the governor, with the candidate, you know, with the...
So they could get a shag?
Yeah. He would then...
Why would they want to? Why would these women do that?
One woman has already given evidence, so I'm not revealing anything secret here. She goes up into Clinton's room. He invites her in. He says, "Nice to see you." He then drops his trousers, sits down and says, "Perhaps you'd like to make me feel more at home in your lovely state, you know." And woman, you know, didn't scream, squealed, fled. But remember, he's got all his bodyguards on the door and all that kind of stuff. And his parting words to her were, "Don't worry, I don't want you to do anything you don't feel happy about," you know? So, and that was his modus operandi
brazen,
all the time.
Isn't it? Completely horribly brazen.
Yeah, but you've got to remember in the Deep South, right, some of those places, it wasn't that unusual behaviour. I remember when I first worked in America, the first time around in the 80s, we had a great Washington correspondent called Ross Mark, okay? Real old-style, old-fashioned. He was Australian, actually, but he'd done the Vietnam War and all that kind of stuff and ended up as the Washington correspondent. And
you said the washing-up correspondent.
No, the Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. correspondent. And he told me once that he was invited down to Texas to see LBJ. All the way with LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, the president who took over after the assassination of President Kennedy, obviously, and probably the most unfitting man for office in the history of America. You know,
apart from Richard Nixon.
Well, at least Nixon fitted into the Washington scene, whereas LBJ never did. LBJ tried to give a couple of steer to the Kennedys when he was vice president, thinking how much they'd enjoy having these couple of, you know, horrifically smelling cattle on their in their compound in Hyannis, you know, in Massachusetts, which had come from a Texas dirt farm and all this kind of stuff. But anyway, he was sitting there with the president once in the president's ranch in Texas, and Lady Bird Johnson came in, you know, and made all the guys a drink and all that and said, "Thank you, gentlemen." And she said, I'm retiring now, Lyndon. And he said, "Yeah, okay, thank you." And as she left and went up the stairs, Lyndon Baines Johnson, the president of the United States of America, said to all these correspondents, they're all foreign correspondents who get invited down once a year, he said, "Gentlemen, there goes the finest piece of ass in Texas." I mean, imagine talking
about your
wife like
how
that.
How rude.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think it is? What is the psychology behind...
Well, you should know because I'm not a woman. Why do women...
I'm asking you because you're a man.
Yeah, yeah.
What is the psychology behind that kind of male behaviour?
I've never quite understood this because maybe I don't have a very high sex drive, but some blokes simply can't leave it alone. They think about it all the time. I've got a colleague and I've had colleagues over the years who just tried on with anybody they come across, you know. They tried on with any female. They don't have any instincts of warmth or compassion or anything like that. They just see it as a physical exercise.
It's reptilian. It is actually a reptilian act, isn't it?
Well, I suppose you can call it reptilian.
Gratification.
Yeah. And I mean, you and I both know, you know, there have been legendary people in Fleet Street who simply abused their power in high office by putting pressure on young employees, sometimes, you know, as far down the old chain as like secretarial duties and that kind of stuff, never mind young female reporters, who would get a knock in the middle of the night on the hotel door at, you know, some think tank that we'd been to in the middle of the, you know, the Cotswolds or something like that, to be told that, you know, they needed to help out, you know, with a bit of emotional relief and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, we had the casting coach, yeah, definitely, in Fleet Street.
Yeah, exactly.
I have horror stories of my own.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, exactly.
I left them out of my memoir because of my children, really.
Yes, of course,
I didn't want them to have to know those things about their mother. Yeah.
I
did anything bad, but I didn't want them to know that I'd been challenged in that way.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. So just getting back to Boris, I mean, you know, life will go on. He will have this child. Who knows?
He's 55. Yeah. You know, and he's got grown-up kids. And even his grown-up children are saying he's the most selfish person on the planet.
Yes, that's right.
Now, what kind of a father has he been to the 5 or 6 kids he has already?
Well, I saw a picture of one of his sons who looks amazingly like him.
He's the dead spit, isn't he?
And he's gone to Cambridge University instead of Oxford. Apparently he did that so he wouldn't follow in his father's footsteps.
Leave
you see
the
what I mean?
Comparison behind.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you haven't managed to be a hands-on, successful, present father 5 or 6 times, how are you going to manage
it? Well, do we know that he hasn't been a successful...
Well, the children are quite rude about him, quite scathing.
Some of them
him.
Are, but I mean, they've all had great educations. They've ended up at Oxford or Cambridge. I mean, they're an amazing family. Look at his siblings and their achievements.
And Stanley, the dad, he's a philanderer as well.
His marriage bust up, didn't it?
When the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
No, I agree. And he seems to be very forgiving of everything that Boris has done
He's got no choice. Yeah. He's got no choice. And also, of Boris's siblings, I've heard one or two stories that might curl hair.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's obviously a family trait, isn't it?
It is a family trait. So that's Boris. Okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky, and we're delighted to bring it to you today from the studios in Maple Street in Fitzrovia. Rather nice part of the world, this, isn't it?
I love this. Yeah, I really am liking our new location.
Yes, okay, that's good. Well, I mean, look, all studios we go to are great studios. Very grateful to all the people who do it. The moment we're embedded here, and it's very exciting. Now, for some unknown reason, when we were chatting, you know, before we came into the studio about things to talk about, you seem to be quite moved about Brian Ferry, okay?
Oh, dear.
Now, you know, I always accord you the title of the rock chick writer extraordinaire. I've never wanted to delve into your past about how close some of these relationships got with some of those rock gods that you've mixed with over the years.
It'll cost you money.
But you don't seem particularly impressed or particularly kind towards Mr. Brian Ferry, who for millions of women in the day was the coolest man with his tuxedo on stage in the whole of the world.
Well, he was the epitome of cool, wasn't he?
He certainly was.
Personification of cool.
What's your name? Virginia Plain?
That.
Oh, I loved his records.
I did really admire him as a musician when I was a very young teenager.
Yes.
I used to really look up to him and think, wow, you know, and we aspired to be that cool, didn't we?
Yes. Well, he was a Geordie as well.
Yeah, and sort of broke out of that. A bit like Sting.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right. Sting and Milkman in Newcastle. Yeah.
It's an unusual location for producing rock stars.
Yes.
But those two came out, so what? He kind of went really big time down in my estimation a couple of years ago when he stole his son Isaac's girlfriend.
Yes.
Amanda Shepherd. And he's recently married her, in fact.
Right.
So you've
Was it the son? Who's the son who's the fox hunter? So he's got a fox hunting son, hasn't he?
I can't remember.
Who
his
goes
name.
To jail, I think, sometimes.
Because he
protests and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's not him.
Yeah.
It's Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
And so Brian is 66. Amanda is 29.
Really? That's
a
huge gap.
37-year age gap.
Yeah.
But not only that, imagine that Christmas dinner, Christmas lunch, whatever you want to call it. So you're all sitting around as a family.
Yes.
You're there, the patriarch of proceedings, with your new wife, and her ex-boyfriend is further down the table, who happens to also be your son.
Yeah.
How do you smooth that one out?
I don't know. You're a bit of a cad to nick your son's girlfriend,
isn't
aren't
it?
You?
I mean, can you get anybody else?
Well, You read in the Dear Deirdre columns all the time, don't you, about...
Try not to.
Well, exactly. But you do all the time about, you know, a woman who's suddenly attracted to a boyfriend's father, you know, because he's a generation older, he's a smoothie and all that kind of stuff. But as for actually nicking your son's girlfriend and then making her your wife, I should imagine that's pretty tough.
I think it's forbidden. It's anything that's forbidden that we're not allowed to go there.
Yeah.
You can't cross that line. Yeah. And we all want what we can't have to a certain extent.
Yes.
And you hear about it in families. I heard one that not too very distant from my family, actually, this situation.
Really?
So a cousin met a man and they got married and they both brought sets of children to the marriage.
Yes.
Now, on the one side, you've got these three girls. On the other side, you've got these two boys.
Yes.
So one of the girls from one side of the family has married one of the boys from the other side of the family.
Right.
So they are effectively step-siblings. I know there's not a blood relationship there, so it's not illegal or anything, but they've just had a baby.
Yeah.
Now, how weird is that?
That is very weird indeed. And
because those kids have all grown up together.
I know exactly what I mean. Knock on any door and you'll get a story like that.
But it's forbidden fruit, isn't it? And this is what I think it is with Brian Ferry. Nobody tells Brian Ferry what he can't have.
No.
Because he's Mr. Cool, you know. He's bound to find me more attractive, even though I'm 66, than my scrawny little son who is not a rock star.
Well, yeah, I had a girlfriend in those days and she loved Brian Ferry. I was almost envious and jealous of Brian Ferry because of the way she used to talk about him. You know, if a Brian Ferry record came on, she was, into this dreamlike state and all that. Because he was, as you quite rightly say, terribly cool. And his records were so brilliant. You know, Love is the Drug, Virginia Plain.
He's a bit of a tosser, though. I didn't know a girl. I had a girlfriend who he hired once
to
come in and sort his library out.
Sort his library
out. Well, it was not a euphemism.
Library.
Not a euphemism. Yeah. To literally sort his library out.
His music library or his book library?
His books
right,
and his kind of archive and everything.
Okay. Yep.
And he was bloody mean to her, actually.
Yes.
Really quite unpleasant.
Yes.
And she said she wouldn't go back.
Oh, dear.
I think the image differs greatly from the reality.
Right, okay.
Yeah. And that you never want to meet your heroes, do you?
Well, you do sometimes. I met Alan Ball, who was the hero of my...
Different in sport.
Well, maybe a different sport. You know, when I was 10 or 11 or 12, Alan Ball was the hero, and I was on the terraces, and I was watching him play for Everton, and he went off to Arsenal. And years later, I became a friend of Alan Ball's through the footballers that I worked with at Talk Sport, and ended up in the trainers and owner's lounge and bar at, you know, Newparkett Racecourse, with Alan Brazil, my colleague who's big into racing, and Alan Ball. And it was unbelievable, you know, to actually stand there and watch a man who won the World Cup in 66 and had played for Everton as a hero and won the championship in 1970. So it was great to meet him. He died very suddenly of a heart attack in his back garden years later down near Southampton, because that was one of the teams he played for and managed. Did he manage Southampton? Yeah, he did, yeah. And he certainly played for them. He played for them when there were five England captains playing for Southampton. Alan Ball, Peter Shilton, Mick Mills, Mick Shannon. You know, it was amazing. But then,
Sport encyclopedia here.
Yeah,
sort
of, yeah.
But there is a humility in sport, and I did notice this growing up because I mixed with a lot of sporting legends.
Of course you did, because your father was a top sports writer and your uncle played for the legendary Spurs team.
Yeah, but we often had George Cohen to lunch on a Sunday or dinner or whatever.
Jimmy Greaves.
Jimmy Greaves as well.
Yep.
But there is a humility among sportsmen which you don't get in entertainment.
Yeah.
Not at every level. Some people are great.
Yes.
You know, but not everyone. I always felt that sports people were approachable and remained humble.
I worked with a guy called Ray Parler, you know very well.
Yeah.
He was in the Invincibles Arsenal team. And he's the most humble man I've ever met. He
lost a lot of money in his divorce.
Well, he certainly did. It was a record divorce in which his wife got at least 50%.
My divorce lawyer handled it.
Oh, did she? Yeah.
That's how I knew about it.
There you go. She got at least 50% and more of everything for a very long time.
Of all his future earnings for the rest of time.
Don't remind Ray about that, honestly. But he's such a nice guy. Ray sometimes can't remember how many cup finals he played. Now, I think he played in six altogether and won five, or he played in five and won four. But such a nice guy. And I think the reason for that is, and this certainly works with people like Wayne Rooney, is they've actually been a star within their own community since about the age of 13. You know what I mean? When you're a young footballer and you suddenly emerge, you get treated differently. And, you know, the guys look up to you and the girls want to go out with you and all that kind of stuff. And when that starts in your teen years, by the time you're in your mid-20s, you take it for granted, if you know what I mean.
Question.
Yeah.
So what made Wayne Rooney a granny shagger? What was that all about?
Well, I don't want to go into that because Wayne Rooney is another great hero of mine. Wayne
yeah,
Rooney
he
was
is,
the
he
greatest Everton footballer since
sexual
Alan Ball.
Predilections, doesn't he?
Well, he was a young lad and he did it because he could
so,
do it.
Even more so, why do you shag a granny?
Well,
then?
Perhaps he was attracted to older women. They weren't grannies anyway. I mean, that's a disgrace. That's a disgraceful thing to talk about. They were older than him. He was about 15 or 16 at the time. He even, on one occasion, wrote a note to one of these women.
Sexual abuse.
He was certainly nothing illegal happened, so it must have been 16 or 17. But he actually wrote a note I read in one of the books to one of these women saying, I shagged you on, and wrote the date down and gave her a bit of paper and signed it Wayne Rooney
for some
bizarre reason.
Well, he's a bit thick then, isn't he? Because there is the evidence.
Yeah, but nobody
if ever
she disputed
comes
that.
Knocking for a couple of million.
But nobody ever disputed it. You know, I mean, what did he do wrong? He was a young lad, and it wasn't illegal. He wasn't underage, and she was a woman, and they
no,
got
but no,
together.
But
what?
He was with Colleen at the time.
Well,
so it was behind his partner's back. So yes, there's quite a lot wrong with that.
I don't really want to get into that because, as I say, you know, he's an extraordinary
he's your mate.
Well, he's not a mate. In fact, I've hardly ever spoken a word to Wayne Rooney. I've admired him from afar. You know, I was never.
Are you forgiving him his extra
marital
activities?
All I'm saying is, it's extraordinary to be. He was at one time the world's greatest 20-year-old footballer, certainly in 2004.
Does that excuse
Portugal.
Him from all manner of
I think you've got to
untoward
behaviour? People like that, people who are the best at what they do, and Wayne Rooney was, are exceptional people.
So therefore we should forgive Boris, are you saying?
Well, I think you have to make allowances for Boris. I mean, when he was at...
And Bill Clinton? And yeah, John F. Yeah, Kennedy?
Well, I don't know. When Boris, getting back
rules
to Boris...
Rules for one,
very,
rules for the other.
Very brief. Well, you may be right, very briefly. Boris was the brightest Oxford student of his generation. He took one of these exams and he got, like, you know, the top prize, 98% in some classics Latin exam or something like that. Made him the brightest person at Oxford University.
But did you see that documentary about him? And they interviewed a number of his tutors and professors at Oxford.
No.
And one of them had a great word for him, which I think still stands as a description.
Yeah, what was
he
it?
He described Boris as a generalist. So he didn't do any work. He didn't know facts and figures.
Right.
He just generalised about everything.
Right.
Which probably made him a very good journalist.
Yeah, it probably did. He only got, by the way, a 2-1.
Well, then he had a good time.
In a degree.
Because if you get a first, then you spent your whole time studying.
And resented it greatly when David Cameron got a first class in politics, philosophy and economics. And for years they ribbed each other about that. But getting away from all that, look, you said earlier in this podcast that, you know, sexual intimidation in the workplace and all that which you went through. There's a case going on at the moment, right? A highly paid female executive claims she was sacked because she did not engage in football banter or go drinking with the lads. This lady, her name is Adrian Liebenberg, dismissed from her £200,000-a-year job, right, which is great, as a sales director at an international packing business. So this is not City of London, where these stories normally come from, OK? After being told that her leadership style was not working, and this has all gone to an employment tribunal. Now, I mean, in Fleet Street, that never happened, did it? There was many women able to... you know, chew the fat with men after work as there were men, if you see what I mean.
Ah, well, the difference here is that the men on Fleet Street were interesting. Now, if this is not a sort of high-flying city job, it's some sort of packing firm, these guys are probably blokes. They're probably not very interesting men. She doesn't want to go drinking with them after school, whatever else. Keeps herself to herself. Mm. Now, that is a very odd reason to sack somebody. But do we know how big the company is? How many employees? That kind of thing?
In her mid-40s, alleged she was marginalised at the company because she did not want to join in with the male banter and the wider masculine working atmosphere.
Well,
I don't know.
Very sexist stuff. Maybe they went to lap dancing clubs.
Well, it doesn't say anything about lap dancing clubs.
Strip joints.
I mean,
that
I wouldn't
kind of
go
thing.
To a lap dancing club anyway, and I certainly wouldn't ask a female employee to come with me.
It's a horrible, horrible culture, and it should be banned, as far as I'm concerned.
She says here tensions grew between her and her boss. And she says, I felt that the boss's modus operandi was to connect with his team over wine, dinner and football. This woman's quite a high flyer because
so they're
previously...
all men, in other words, apart
yeah,
from her.
Yeah, previously she'd worked with BP Castrol. So she must be quite a high flyer. She said in evidence, because I did not embrace those things in the way that my male colleagues did, I was perceived as not being a team player for the gang. But she was never told that. These were her, you know, these were her conclusions.
She has presumed
yes,
what
a presumption.
What was she fired
yeah.
for then? What was the reason given?
They haven't got round to that yet, okay? She says she was particularly angry because I believe that I've been treated as I have because I'm a woman, either directly or indirectly. It has destroyed my belief that if someone sets their mind to something and works hard, they have a good chance of achieving their goals.
Sounds to me as though she's right.
Well,
she's got a case.
So here we go. You asked, what was she sacked for? So according to the company, they said that Mrs. Liebenberg was sacked because of poor performance rather than sexism. In a statement to the tribunal, the boss, a guy called Mr. Rossi, cited her dictatorial approach and lack of respect for senior colleagues. So,
well, she sounds to me
yeah.
devil's
well,
advocate.
Well, you see, you're
here.
Assuming
she,
now, aren't you?
I
and
am
you're
assuming,
on her side. Yeah.
I am assuming. Yeah. My yeah. default position is yeah. to side with the female, obviously,
yes.
because I am one.
Yes.
It sounds to me as though she was the only female in an all male setup.
Yep.
And it was a very sexist culture
yeah.
in this office. She
but
was,
sometimes, haven't you got to put up with that?
Well, she was intimidated by it.
Yeah.
And if they made her life a misery because she wouldn't go drinking with them, get silly,
yep.
let her hair down,
yep.
allow them to make sexist remarks to her,
yep.
talk about bloody football,
yeah.
You know, and I like football, but
yeah,
lots
of
women don't, lots
yeah, yeah.
of men don't.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
None of those things can be forced on a person.
Yeah. No.
So I'm sort of feeling sympathy for this woman.
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
Okay. It's a bit terrible of me to say, oh, why shouldn't she, you know, she should have to put up with it. Why should she have to put up with it? If I was working in a company where I was one man in a room with nine women.
There you go.
And they constantly talked about their boyfriends or they constantly talked about, you know, things that women talk about,
periods,
their fingernails.
And
yeah, all that kind of stuff.
And,
wrong time yeah, of the year,
makeup,
the month and all that kind of stuff.
Wrong
yeah,
time of the year.
Exactly. And then if I started saying, well, I'm not really very interested in that, and then felt that they were then ganging up on me because I didn't sort of fit in with them, that would be quite intimidating,
yes, it
wouldn't
would.
It? You
and
know.
If you didn't go on their
yeah.
girls' nights out
yeah.
and you could be fired for that, that
yes.
would seem very wrong, wouldn't it?
Yes, of course it would, yeah. Yeah, and the girls' nights out might be like, you know, a table in the corner of a wine bar drinking cocktails rather than standing at a bar with a group of males like you do normally, and you might find that intimidating. So I can understand that. I can't stand going out in groups anyway, can you?
Nah.
I hate going out in groups.
Three or four max. Really.
Oh, no, I can't even stand that because, you know, I like to be in charge when we go out, if you see what I mean. I have to try to dictate the pace because I want to be able to decide how long I want to be there, what I want to drink, if I want to eat or if I don't want to eat and what time I want to go home. And the thing is, I mean, when I see people, you know, sometimes you go into a pub or something like that or a restaurant and a table of 12, you know, they've pushed a load of tables, got all 12.
Oh, like Christmas party,
oh,
Christmas
you've got,
lunch.
Oh, you've got
you
a...
You can't talk to the person at the other end. You're never going to talk to them.
Not only that, but, you know, it takes a span of 15 or 20 minutes for everybody to get the right meal.
Yeah,
and then
that.
That's not the right meal.
And then
meal.
You get the wrong meal.
You've got the right meal, send
and
it back.
And it's cold.
And it's cold. Don't like that.
Don't send it back because they spit in it.
Oh, well, I don't want to know about that. But then, and then the idea that, you know, you're talking across a table to somebody, I'm not interested in what people want to talk about. I only want to talk about things I want to talk about.
But you're
and that's
a recluse. You're a bit of a loner.
I'm not a loner, but I would happily go out and have lunch with yourself because
well,
we have so
some
much,
very enjoyable lunches, don't we?
We have had enjoyable lunches, but we have so much in common. We have both had decades in Fleet Street, so we have a common bond there. We
know
have
all
a,
the same people.
We know all the same people.
Had all the same bosses.
Had all the same bosses.
Had all the same women. No.
Well,
not quite.
Women or men or whatever.
Yeah.
A lot of my friends, you know, have been your boyfriends and some of your friends have been my girlfriends and that kind
it's
of stuff.
It's a vicious rumour.
All that's gone on. But no, what I was going to say is that that makes me feel comfortable in your company. But I can't be comfortable in the company of six people if three of them are not that well known to me but just happen to work in the same place, you know what I mean? And I have nothing in common with
and
them.
And you don't care.
No.
Small talk, doesn't that get on your nerves?
Small talk gets on my nerves.
So what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, I can't really be asked to explain.
And the other thing that gets on my nerves these days is the wokeism. So you don't know whether you can say anything to anybody these days that's going to cause offence or not. And that's why I only want to go and, you know, socialise with people I've known for 20 or 30 years, so I know exactly where I stand.
There you go. Never ask a woman when her baby's due, well, because she is just fat.
Yeah. But not only that, what I'm saying is that, you know, you can immediately make yourself very unpopular with people if you say just the one wrong thing because you don't know well enough.
And then dig yourself in a bit
more. I mean, look, we're inside a broadcasting organisation now, right? Okay, lots of great people here, most of them younger than me. And I often, you know, meet a couple of the guys for a drink around the corner sometimes when I'm finished work here. But you have to be very, very careful what you say. I enjoy having a drink with them, talk to them about broadcasting techniques and all that kind of stuff. But I wouldn't go beyond the business here to start telling them how I feel about, you know, the result of the election or Brexit or anything like that, because you get yourself into terrible trouble. Or you might comment on something like that court case I've just been... the tribunal case I've just been talking to you about. And if you express the wrong view, then you've made an enemy for life these
definitely.
Days.
Oh, definitely. And that really came to the fore with the whole Brexit scenario, didn't it?
It certainly did.
Whole families were falling out.
Awful.
How stupid.
Listen, tell me just one thing, please, as we're coming to the end of this podcast. You're listening to... Planet Porky, folks. Have we ever had one of those nightmare holidays?
Yeah.
Where everything went wrong?
Everything went wrong. This was, I went to Tobago. I was between houses because we'd sold
Tobago.
Our, yeah, it's Trinidad in the start, and Tobago.
It's at the start of the Beach Boys song, isn't it? Aruba, Tobago. Aruba. Oh, I want to take it. Yeah. But
We were
Florida
between houses.
Keys.
That's very nice, Florida Keys.
Yeah.
Have you ever driven down there?
Yes.
What a nice journey there.
Yes,
that
was. All the way down.
Got to Ernest Hemingway's house.
That's right. Oh, did you? Yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
No, but I was
so
in Tobago.
Yeah.
So sold the house, couldn't move into the new house because it wasn't ready yet, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Let's go on holiday.
Yes.
So left one, the eldest child, because she was doing exams.
Right.
So she stayed with my mom.
Yeah.
And the other two came with us. They were very little at the time, sort of 3 and 4.
Oh, right. Okay.
Went out to dinner one night with my husband, left the two small kids with a babysitter.
Yes.
As you do in an upmarket resort, not thinking anything of it.
Yes.
And we had a very lovely dinner, came out of the restaurant, and as we came down the steps, these sort of external steps into the car park, suddenly this guy jumped out of the bushes, the banana trees, with a restaurant napkin tied around his face.
Yes.
And he had a gun.
Good God.
Which he rammed up my nose and then had me down on the floor.
Yeah.
And he was trying to break off my emerald and diamond engagement ring.
Oh, my God.
And
that
my
is a nightmare.
My husband had spotted a well in the car park. Yeah. And he'd sort of gone, well, you know, joking. Let's go and have a look down the well. See if so he'd gone ahead.
Right.
And he hadn't realised what was going on.
Good God.
Until I managed to sort of make a muffled scream. And then he turned around.
Yeah.
And then ran at this guy, making a sound I'd never heard in my life, and I've never heard since.
Yeah.
And they were having this tussle, and I was screaming, "He's got a gun! He's got a gun!" And,
exactly.
And trying to, and it is true. All the things you hear in situations where you're really up against it and you're stressed and you want to run and you can't run. It was like running through treacle, and I was trying to get back up the stairs to alert somebody that this was going on.
Yes.
And in the end, the guy ran off.
Yeah.
And mercifully, we were not killed.
Right.
And ever since then I've had nightmares every now and again thinking, what would have happened if he'd shot the pair of us, two little kids back in this hotel room?
Yes.
You know, how would they have known who to let know back in England, who
absolutely.
Kids belonged to, all of those things.
Terrible.
And that they go through my mind to this day.
Yeah. I
20 years later.
That is a horrifying experience, because the reason I asked, and this is black humour, it's really terrible, right? Is because
I'm sweating now telling that story.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Well, it's
must have been, you know, you were close to being shot, and that's a terrible thing.
A gun up my nose. I swear, sometimes I can still feel it.
Oh my God, that's terrible. But a bit of black humour here, and people who are listening to this will accuse me of being cruel and all this. But I thought this story was quite funny.
You can be quite cruel, mate.
I can be quite cruel. This guy goes on holiday, okay? and he decides to do a parachute jump. A Brit who
what
plunged.
Is coming?
Eh?
What is coming?
Well, what's coming is they gave him a parachute with holes in it.
Oh, God. They really didn't like him.
Needless to say, I'm afraid he's dead.
Oh, no.
And, yeah.
Why are we laughing?
Well, I know it's terrible. I said it's a bit of black humour and it's really.
What, they
not
did this
very
on
nice.
Purpose?
No, of course they didn't do it on purpose. It
they was, didn't check was, the parachute.
No.
Aren't they supposed to be checked?
Yeah, well, I think you know, somebody obviously didn't do the job properly. Well, a Brit who
terrible.
Plunged to his death in a Grand Canyon skydiving tragedy had been given a parachute with holes in it. US cops have revealed. I mean, you know, I don't know how this happens.
There was a case recently,
these
wasn't
things
there?
Shouldn't happen in America. Let me just finish this. Christopher Swales, 55, was doing a tandem leap as a 30th wedding anniversary gift from his wife. But he
she saves getting divorced.
Yeah, that's right. But his first skydive, hang on, my glasses are going funny here. First skydive ended in disaster when something went wrong as he and his instructor team, instructor came into land. Dad of two, Krista, was killed, but his jump partner survived with just a broken leg. So he was doing it with an instructor.
Yeah, that's a tandem dive.
A tandem dive, yeah. But they put a hole in his parachute and he died. And I thought, God, that is the ultimate holiday nightmare,
that is, yeah.
Except yours is almost as bad.
Yeah.
I it always attracted me because I've told this story before to our listeners a time ago. Parachute story for me was on one of these rafts in Marbella Harbour and a boat comes round, you know, it's whizzing round and then they link you to the boat and the parachute lifts you in the air.
Oh,
and,
have you done that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Well, I won't do it again because what happened was I was on the raft and it's just the boat just continually goes round and it slows down a bit. They unhook the guy who's come down.
Paragliding.
Yeah,
that's
paragliding.
Isn't it?
And then they hook you and then you have to bound across the platform for six steps and leap into the air. Well, the problem was I was getting the eye off a young lady, you know, in a very attractive swimming costume and giving her the eye back.
You're supposed to concentrate.
I know you are. And I didn't
One
notice.
One thing at a time.
I didn't notice. And then the boat comes and the guy before me lands on the platform. They take the rope off him. They clip it onto me, but I wasn't aware of it. And then the boat, you know, they put his foot down, sped up. Bang, I hadn't done the six bounding leaps across the platform. I was dragged head first into the water and dragged for about 300 or 400 yards under the water like a torpedo. I mean, it nearly tore my lungs out. There was so much water going in my mouth. I know. And then when eventually I did get up, I went too high and then bounced down again and cut all my legs on the force of hitting
cut
all my legs.
How many did you have?
Well, cut both of my legs on the force of hitting the water, and it was very unpleasant. Anyway,
I'm sorry for you. That's
absolutely
a terrible thing.
I didn't do as badly as the poor chap who had a hole in his parachute.
And this was in the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, I think it
so
was
there
actually.
Rules
yeah,
and
yeah,
regulations,
yeah,
aren't
yeah.
there about
but
parachutes?
I, you know, I love America, and I always say everything works in America, but it did not on this occasion.
Where was that case not long ago where somebody tried to kill, was it the mistress or the wife? Or yeah. There was, wasn't it something to do with the army and they sabotaged the parachute?
Oh, yes, yes. The allegation was that he cut the ropes in her parachute so that when the parachute came out, it wasn't connected to the pack on her back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she survived.
Yeah, but she survived but was very badly injured. Right, OK, that's it for today, folks. Thank you very much indeed. Leslie Ann, as ever, thank you for joining me.
My
Remind
pleasure.
People how they can get hold of you.
Oh, on Twitter, at yep. LAJWriter.
Yes, very nice. Mm. And you can get hold of me at MikeParry8. By the way, folks, we've got a live show coming up in just a few weeks now. It's at the Hen and Chickens on a Sunday afternoon.
Palm it's going to be Sunday. It's Palm Sunday afternoon.
Oh, it's Palm Sunday afternoon, is it?
Yeah.
OK, well, there you go. Palm yourself off to the Hen and Chickens and come and see Leslie Ann and myself. You'd be very welcome indeed. Have a bit of lunch in Islington, North London, and then for a bit of afternoon entertainment, come and see us. Thank you very much indeed. This has been Planet Porky. Back with you soon.
Question.
Yeah.
So what made Wayne Rooney a granny shagger? What was that all about?
Well, I don't want to go into that because Wayne Rooney is another great hero of mine. Wayne
yeah,
Rooney
he
was
is,
the
but he
greatest Everton footballer since
sexual
Alan Ball.
Predilections, doesn't he?
Well, he was a young lad and he did it because he could
so,
do it.
Even more so, why do you share a granny?
Well, perhaps he was attracted to older women. They weren't grannies anyway. I mean, that's a disgrace. That's a disgraceful thing to talk about. They were older than him. He was about 15 or 16 at the time. He even, on one occasion, wrote a note to one of these women.
Sexual abuse.
Nothing illegal happened, so it must have been 16 or 17. But he actually wrote a note. I read in one of the books to one of these women saying, "I shagged you on," and wrote the date down and gave her a bit of paper and signed it Wayne Rooney
for some
bizarre reason.
Well, he's a bit thick then, isn't he? Because there is the evidence.
He invites her in. He says, "Nice to see you." He then drops his trousers, sits down and says, "Perhaps you'd like to make me feel more at home in your lovely state, you know." And woman, you know, didn't scream, squealed, fled. But remember, he's got all his bodyguards on the door and all that kind of stuff. And his parting words to her were, "Don't worry, I don't want you to do anything you don't feel happy about, you know." They gave him a parachute with holes in it.
Oh, God. They really didn't like him.
Needless to say, I'm afraid he's dead.
Oh, no.
Yeah.